You're listening to the Bravehearted Voices podcast. In this podcast, we feature sermons that deeply stir us toward Jesus Christ and living fully for His glory. As you listen to this powerful collection of communicators from yesteryear, it is our desire that you be stirred to live a life fully given to Jesus Christ and discover a Christianity that actually works.
You realize that in Matthew chapter 28, verse 16 through 20, that there is a natural division, and we talked about it a little bit. The first two verses are kind of a setup, obviously. He's setting the stage for what's going to be taking place in terms of the last three verses, which are, of course, the speaking of Jesus Himself. And these last three verses are what we really want to focus on. And there are basically two sentences in the last statement, the last three verses. And the last sentence goes from verse 19 through the end of verse 20, which is a lengthy sentence and is just loaded with overwhelming truth. And we'd like to read verse 18, 19, and 20, which are the words of Jesus and the closing three verses of the book. Matthew chapter 28, verse 18. And Jesus came and spoke to them, saying, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Amen." There's something really significant and heavy about these three verses. When I use the word heavy, I'm talking about weighty, I'm talking about deep, I'm talking about focal point, I'm talking about central, I'm talking about really significant. I understand that all scripture is significant, and I know that every scripture has value as it is pointing to the truth, which is, of course, is Him, the Jesus Himself. I understand that. But I also understand that there are times in the scriptures when there are focal points, there are central things, there is a summary, there is an eruption that takes place, and it's as if all the other scriptures are coming and pointing to that one single focal point. And it seems to me that's exactly what's taking place here. That these three verses, the speaking of Jesus, the close of this book, somehow are weighty and heavy in their significance. I would give you some suggestions on why they are so heavy, at least in my mind. One is the fact of climax. They are the climax to Matthew's writing. No question about that. Is it not significant that Matthew comes to the close of his book and he does not, oh, this is so unusual, he does not rely on his own commentary. He does not rely on his own thought process. He does not rely on what he thinks about it to close out the book. He relies on the words of Jesus Himself. That's so unlike preachers, isn't it? We read the scriptures and then we give our 45 minutes and we have the final say. Wouldn't it be something if we'd come back and say what really matters is what He said, let me give it to you again. And Matthew's doing that, and it's very significant because, you see, he's moving all the way through his book to this eruption which is taking place right here. You understand that in the beginning of the book, Jesus had taken the power He contained within Himself and transferred it to His disciples and gave them instructions in chapter 10. But the instructions went something like this. They were to isolate themselves to this little Jewish movement. They were to isolate themselves to this little Israel. He told them, only go to the house of Israel. And they ministered to this little minority. And He was totally focused right there. Oh, there were some things that happened that we don't have time to get into that began to change His mind. And Jesus began to look broader. He began to look beyond. And He began then to minister to a Gentile world. And then it's as if there's some kind of rumbling going on, because in the last 6 months of His ministry, He takes His disciples aside and He just literally pours Himself into them. And you get the feeling that this is all going someplace really significant. And sure enough, it does, because there's the cross and the resurrection. And by the time you get here, you see now it's exploding out of a little Jewish movement, out of reaching a little Gentile world around Him, and exploding into an all-nation thing. And this is a world perspective He's laying on us. Folks, we're in over our heads in a real big deal. No question about that. And certainly that is the climax of His book. I would give you another suggestion why these words are so significant and weighty and heavy. Not only are they the climax to Matthew's writings, but they are central to the revelation of Jesus. If you want to find the heartbeat of Jesus, if you want to come down to what really is central to Him, if you want to take a knife and split Him right down the middle and go to His deep inward heart and find out what makes Him tick, this is it right here. These three verses. What He's really laying out to them here is something of what's been throbbing within Him from the very beginning and the whole passion of His whole being. And of course, you know that when you find out what's central to Jesus, what the heartbeat of Jesus is, you've really found out what the heartbeat of the Father is, because you see, He's the revelation of the Father. So we've really literally split God wide open, and we've discovered all over anew in these three verses what God is all about. For He came to seek and to save that which was lost. And the whole heartbeat and the throb of all that Jesus is about is this redemptive process, this pour my life out, this how can I reach you, this how can I elevate you, how can I mold you and shape you into all that I've dreamed you could be. And the whole focus of His being is somehow right there into make disciples of all the nations. I would give you one other suggestion why these are so weighty, so heavy. There's the climax, of course, to Matthew's writings. They are central to the revelation of Jesus, and they are the call to the church as it's established in the book of Acts. Oh, we've already talked about that long and loud, about this whole business of the call that just reeks through all of these three verses. It's just everywhere. And you understand that before He gets done in the beginning pages of the book of Acts, He's going to give what we might call, what we might consider the mission statement of the church. Acts 1:8, where He said, "You shall receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you shall be witnesses to me in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth." And isn't that exactly the throb of what these three verses are about? And what else could the church be concerned about? What else is there for us to give our money to? What else is there for us to spill our lives out for? What else should we give our energy for? What else should we be upset about? Should we ever raise our voice in the board meeting over anything except, are we fulfilling the overwhelming call, the mission statement, the pour your life out, the shake our world kind of stuff? Isn't that the fundamental? Isn't that the all-consuming? Isn't that the whole deal? Isn't that the total focus? It's all here in this passage. Because this passage, these three verses somehow bring us front and center. You see, it's these three verses that somehow, when we live at the heart of God, we begin to know the thrust of these three verses. These three verses seem to say it all. Now, it's interesting that as you look at Matthew chapter 28, verse 19 and 20, which is the last sentence in this passage, you begin to realize there is a central thrust of the passage. There is the main verb. And we want to spend our time tonight trying to talk about that main verb, and it's make disciples. So everything we want to say tonight is going to spill out of that, the essence of that concept, as He turned to His disciples in verse 19 and said, "Go therefore and make disciples, make disciples." That seems to be the big deal. Let me suggest to you, number one, that out of the idea, out of the word, make disciples, there comes a command. I'm having a difficult time with this whole passage. The difficult time that I'm having with the passage is, it's hard to unlearn in order that you can learn. That's really hard for me. And what I'm trying to do, in honesty, is I'm trying to somehow, some way, align my life with the truth of this passage, which seems to be in tone and emphasis contrary to where I've been. And that's very difficult for me. Oh, one of the places that's happened is in this command thing. Because as we've already stated in times past, the word "go" is very significant in the passage, but it's not a command. Go therefore. And we spent a whole evening talking just about the word "go." But you see, that's not in the command mood. No, that's not an imperative, "go therefore." And it's something of a relief and a whole new training to think, hey, woo, I don't have to go. In fact, it's a bit of a relief, isn't it? Because you see, I thought so forcibly about the fact, oh, I've got to go. Yes, I've got to go. It's a command of Jesus. So then I contrived ways I could go without going. See, oh, I give money to missionaries and they go in my place. That's it. I've hired somebody to do my work. See, and so I've contrived ways in which I could fulfill the go without really going. And yet somehow down inside it gnawed at me that that wasn't quite right, you know. But now I'm discovering from the passage, woo, I don't have to go. And what a relief. I can wipe the sweat off my brow because this business of go is not a command. See, there's not a gun in my back. It's not a duty. It's not an obligation. It's not a have to. It's not I'll get you if you don't. There's not one single ounce of legislation on the business of going. See, it's not a rule. It's not legalistic. It's not there. There is no attempt in the passage at all to motivate us. It's assumed. I cannot get away from that. It's assumed. Oh, you're alive? Well, I assume you're breathing then. Yes. That's assumed, right? It's assumed that you... I don't have to say, breathe, folks, in and out, breathe. See, it's assumed that you're doing that. And since you are breathing, well, why don't you make disciples? See, since you're already going, and the whole emphasis of the passage is, hey, you've got this internal compulsion. You've got this drive within. You've got this burning passion within. You've got this. And we can't. In fact, you're already out the door with your head on your head. And we're saying, hey, while you're going, here's a command. Make disciples out there. And the whole go idea is assumed. There was a time in my life I decided to get back into the shock treatment. I got off of that, but I'm kind of borderlining on getting back into that and being shocked again. You know, we lose the ability to be shocked. We become so used to things that no longer... We see something on TV and it used to... Well, can you believe that? But we look at it now and say, oh, yeah. See, we're not shocked anymore. I'd like to get back to being shocked. Wouldn't that be great? Let's get back to being shocked. Well, we got somebody in our church. They're Christian. Yeah, they say they are. Well, how they're going? No. Can you believe that? Well, what are you... Oh, that's shocking. Well, how could that be? And just be shocked, surprised, like, hey, it's a contradiction. That's like talking about dry water. What are you talking about? How could it be? I mean, we're incapable of being that. How could you be a Christian and not go? See, it's assumed that if you're in the body, if you're a part of Him, if you know Him, that you got this internal, you just can't, and it's a drive, and you're compelled, and you just can't, and you have to, you don't have to, but you want to, and then, therefore, you have to, and it's this, and I can't keep from, and you just got this inside drive that just won't let you quit, and you are going. But see, there's no command in that. That's the whole compulsion. That's the I can't keep from doing it. But there is a command in the passage. See, it's not in the business of go, but the command in the passage is in the main verb, which is make disciples. That's a command. As certainly as He gave 10 commandments in the Old Testament, so He's given a commandment in the New Testament, and it is make disciples. Come on, make disciples. Since you're on the move, don't forget, I've given you a commandment what to do with your energy, what to do with your outspill. Don't waste yourself. Hey, your compulsion, use it wisely, and here's how I want you to use it. I want you to make disciples. Isn't it interesting that He's not talking about putting on great programs? Isn't it interesting He's not talking about Sunday school numbers? Isn't it interesting He's not talking about district assembly reports? He's talking about making disciples. Isn't it interesting He's not discussing how many work and witness teams you've been on? Isn't it interesting He's not talking about numbers of years on boards or Sunday school teaching? He's talking about making disciples. It's like all of this other stuff is somehow immaterial and does not matter, but it's making disciples. And the real issue is not how many years. The real issue is, did you make disciples? That's the big deal. He's not talking about great church structures. He's not talking about beautiful sanctuaries. He's talking about, did you make disciples? And the whole issue is down to making disciples. Like every committee meeting is meeting for one single purpose. How can we make disciples? Like on every board meeting, we've only got one item on the agenda, and it's how can we make disciples? Like this is the one single thing going on, making disciples. Like in our family relationships, the overwhelming concern about the whole thing is making disciples. How can I help my wife to be a disciple? How can I help my husband to be a disciple? Oh, my kids, they've got to be a disciple. You know how we are so focused on the physical? We will go to any expense to see that our kids are physically what they ought to be. Oh, they get the sniffles. We spend thousands of dollars to do anything, everything we can do to be sure that they are. We are so concerned. We are doubly concerned about, are they disciples? Because that really does matter. I'd rather have my kids sick and be a disciple than be well and not be one. Because the big deal is not physical health. The big deal is making disciples. You understand how concerned we are about education, how this is such a high priority. Oh, they've got to be educated. We're concerned about the level of education that they get, how good it is, where they arrive on the charts, how good they really are at it. We're really concerned about that. How doubly concerned we are about, are they disciples? Because, way beyond the educational system, there is this make disciples thing. See, this is the command. This is the deal. This is the one thing. Make disciples. Well, okay, preacher, if that's the one deal, if that's the command, if that's the focus of this whole thing, what exactly is it we're making them? What is a disciple? Obviously, that becomes the question, which brings us not only to the command, but to the combination. Now, it's interesting when you come right down to the word make disciples. That's one word in the original language. And you know that it's not the word disciple at all. We made that up. Well, sure, we had to translate it. So we searched in our mind and in our vocabulary to come up with the word that comes closest to what he's talking about here. And the closest thing we were able to come up with is the idea of disciple. But what is the content of that disciple? And I want to tell you that there are two major thrusts to the concept of being a disciple. Now, these two major ideas, the minute you divide them, the minute you take them apart, they become two different ideas. The minute you bring them together, they make up disciple. But the minute they're separated, they're not disciple. In other words, you can't have one of them and be half a disciple. See, the minute you are separated, the minute you take them and divide them, you're not a disciple. It's only when they are together, yes, disciple. See, it's kind of like water. H2O, hydrogen, oxygen, separately hydrogen, oxygen, no problem. You see them, they're different. When you bring them, can you beat that? It's water. And somehow when they link together, they form this one thing. But when you, that's the way it is with disciple. These two ideas have to be distinctly together in order to be disciple. Idea number one, believe. This is old stuff, isn't it? Believe, yeah. And you know what we mean by believe? We're talking about resting. We're talking about depending. We're talking about counting on. We're talking about knowing. We're talking about grasping. We're talking about experiencing. We're talking about focusing. We're talking about Him and Him alone. We're talking about commitment. We're talking about believing. See, that's a vital part, one of the elements of the whole business of discipleship. Jesus said, I am the way. Will you count on that? Will you believe that? And what does it mean to believe that He really is the way? Quit looking for other ways. See, it's not the process of elimination. It's not, I'll try this. Well, that didn't work. Probably is then. Well, maybe I'll try this too. No, it's pushing everything aside and absolutely convinced there is no other way. So here is the way, and I'm letting my whole weight down on that, and I'm no longer in search. I'm letting my whole being down on the fact that I'm focusing in on, and this is the single I'm believing. Resting, focused. Now that's really significant in being a disciple, but you and I know that you could focus, you could believe, you could say, yes, He is the way, you could give assent to that and still not be a disciple. Because you see, being a disciple is much more than just believing. That's only one of the elements. And it's only when that element of belief is linked with this second element that you come up with this vital concept of disciple. What is this second element? This just tickled me to death. And you'd think I planned this or made this up because this has been such a part of my life in the last years. But it isn't. The second element is learner or seeker. Can you believe that? See, a disciple is a believer who is seeking. Now, you understand there's all kinds of people who believe but who are not disciples. And there's all kinds of people who are seeking all kinds of things who aren't disciples. But when you bring this believe in Him and this seeking thing and you get them together, and an amazing thing takes place. You become a disciple. And the two have to somehow be together. This seeking the heart of God thing. See, when I say seeking, I'm not sure what that means in your vocabulary. I don't know what your framework is. See, maybe in your thought process, that brings up the idea, oh, he's seeking, which means he's doing something. I want to propose to you that in my thought process, when I say seeking, it has absolutely nothing to do with doing. It has to do with an inside being thing. That the whole seeking thing is, oh, I do something because I'm seeking. But, hey, the doing, what I do to seek isn't seeking. Seeking is an inside, it's this back to the inner spirit thing. It's this back to the inner compulsion. It's this back to, oh, hungry. I'm hungry. What's hungry? Not a doing thing, a being thing. I am hungry. That's an inside gnawing. I don't turn it on. I don't turn it off. I don't get up and say, well, I think I won't be hungry today. See, you can't control it. It's just an uncontrollable inside. Oh, brother, there it goes again. Here, I'm being driven. And because I'm hungry, I do something. But the doing something, the eating is not the hunger. I do that because I am hungry. But the hunger is an inside and I can't... See, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about an inside seeking thing. We're talking about an inside drive. A hungering and thirsting after righteousness. And I can't turn it on and I can't turn it off. I can't say, oh, I'm going to start seeking. No, you can't make it happen. But what I found out is this believing thing somehow stimulates the seeking thing. That when I really get focused on Him, oh, that stimulates me to seek. And as I begin to seek, guess what? Woo! I find out more than I ever found out before. I know Him better than I knew Him before. And lo and behold, I'm believing more than I believed before. This is great. And of course, now that I'm believing more, well, guess what? I'm seeking more. And now that I'm seeking more, I'm believing more. And now that I'm believing more, I'm seeking more. And what's happening to me? A disciple. See, that's the deal. And it's all wrapped up in that. And don't think that this is something I invented, because you guys taught me this. You taught me this all the time. You taught me songs when I was just a little kid. Songs like, I'm pressing on the upward way, new heights I'm gaining every day. And what were you saying to me? Oh, seek. Seek. And as you seek, you'll see Him and you'll believe. And as you believe, guess what? You'll have this inside hunger that says, oh, I want to seek. And the whole thing will begin to take place and you will be a disciple. How are things going in your life? Oh, about the same. About the same. What are you talking about? How could that be? About the same. Oh, yeah, things are about the way they've always been. Well, how could that be? How are things going in the church? Oh, about the same. How could that be? How could that be? Tell me, please, how that could be. Well, now, Manly, I've been a Christian for 70 years. I've learned the doctrines. I know how the church operates. Hey, I've got the general patterns down. I got things just, and we're all kind of, and we're just kind of, and it's about the same. Oh, don't you understand? That's so contrary to everything that's going on in the book. That's so opposite to the whole seeking thing. The whole seeking thing is things are not the same. There's gigantic things happening. I'm telling you, He's sucking me into Himself. And there's radical revolution taking place in my life. And the changes that are going on in my own system. And the way I can see myself grow. Man, I'm getting taller all the time. And the whole thing is just expanding because I'm in the seeking thing. And things are not the same. And you should be old enough in the faith by now to know how dumb you really are. And to seek all the more. And the more mature you get in Him, the faster the pace of seeking gets. Because the more you know you don't know, and the more you believe in what you do know. And so the whole thing begins, and you become a seeker. It's called disciple. Belief, seeking. And it's in that combination that we know the reality of Him. There's one other aspect to the word I want to lay on you. Yes, there's the command, no question about it. It's in the imperative form, make disciples. This is the big deal. There is this combination. What we're making, what's coming out of this is this believing and this seeking that are linking together and forming a whole new thrust. And it's all about discipleship. But there's this third, which is all about completion. Now, it's interesting that when I, and this really blew me away, that when I came to verse 19 and I looked at the word make disciple, it's in the verb form. And what I discovered out of this word make disciple was, it was an active voice. Now, what that means, I understand, is that the action of the verb is really a result of the subject of the sentence. What is the subject of the sentence? In verse 19, you'll note the subject of the sentence is an understood you, which is talking about you. I'm talking about you that are sitting right there. You go and make disciples, and you are responsible for the action of making disciples. So the weight of this whole business of making disciples somehow hangs in your hand, and you become responsible for it, and it's a result of the action of your being. Now, the reason that confused me was this. Because that's contrary to everything else he's been telling me in his book. See, what he's been telling me in his book is, hey, you're not responsible. You can't do it. You're totally inadequate. That's why you ought to deny yourself, take up your cross and follow me. Because you can't pull it off. See, you're not adequate to do it. Because this is not something you can pull off. So why don't you die? See, he was constantly calling his disciples out of themselves into the style of the cross, where it was not them, where it was him. And that they couldn't and he could. So why didn't they allow him to do it? The focus was never on his disciples. It was always upon the resource and the person that he is. In fact, you see that in this very passage. He begins in verse 18 by saying, all authority's been given to me. Like, it's not about you guys. It's about me and who I am. It's not about what you're going to do. It's me and who I am and what I'm going to do through you. That the emphasis is not on you guys crank it up. The emphasis is upon, oh, turn loose and let me begin to flow through you. Let me begin to do in and out of you. Let me begin to be the source of your life. Because all authority's been given to me, not you. It's been given to me. So he's been hounding me about this. Come on, push yourself aside. It's really interesting when you get in the book of Acts. This is so startling. Not one single time in the book of Acts does it ever upplay the disciples and their greatness. The whole growth of the church in the book of Acts is never traceable back to them and their brilliancy. It never says one time, whoa, they had PhDs in church growth. It never says one time, well, they formed a quartet and wow, were they good. It never says one single time, man, did they have a charismatic personality. See, it never talks about, oh, their great administrative ability. It never talks about their brilliant writing strategies. It never talks about any of that. You know what it says? Woo, God came, brother. God came and something happened, and it was all because of, and it's not them. And you almost get the feeling that God could have done this through just about anybody. Amen. See, that's the whole thrust. Then all of a sudden, here I am. I'm reading this, go therefore and make disciples. And he's talking about you, Stephen Manley. I'm talking about you. You're responsible. Get out there and do it. And I'm saying, what? This is the opposite of what he's been telling me. So I had to look at this thing three or four times and say, what is it exactly that's going on? And it all came together in the actual definition of the word. Oh, when I went to the Greek dictionary, the Greek lexicon, and looked up the word that's given right here for make disciples, it has a primary meaning. You know what the primary, down to it, number one meaning of this verb is? To be a disciple. Then you read on in the definition and down further it gives you a secondary meaning. And you know what the secondary meaning is? Make disciples. So the primary meaning of this particular verb is to be a disciple. And the secondary meaning is make disciples. Then I really got interesting because I found out that this verb that's used right here is only used four times in the entire scriptures. What? Three of those times is in the book of Matthew itself and one time's in the book of Acts. That's the only time this verb shows up. Yeah, four times. So outside of the passage we're dealing with, if you push that one aside, you've got two times in the book of Matthew and one time in the book of Acts. And did you know that every single time in those three times, outside of this one right here, all three of those times, the meaning of the word, the translation of the word has to do with being a disciple. Let me give you an example. Don't even need to turn a page. Just look back into chapter 27, verse 57. Here's this guy by the name of Joseph of Arimathea, a rich guy, you know. And here he comes to get the body of Jesus. And you know what it says at the end of verse 57? It says, who himself had also become a disciple of Jesus. That's the same word. He had become. Now, it could have translated, we could have translated that, I suppose, who himself had been made. Which probably would be true, but you see, he's not being made, he's being. And the being concept is so forceful in the translation even. The being concept is so forceful in the meaning of the word that it shows up in the translation. And I'm telling you that all three translations, all three times it's translated in that it shows up outside of this passage we're dealing with in Matthew 28:19, it always has the being idea in it. Be a disciple. Now, do you not think, now this is radical, do you not think, just consider it, do you not think if all three times outside of this passage the emphasis is on becoming or being a disciple, that maybe the possibility is that right here in verse 19 the emphasis is not on making as much as being, and that this could be translated, go therefore and be a disciple in all the nations. And what would happen if you would go out and be a disciple in all the nations? Woo! You'd start making them, wouldn't you? Now, I don't know what you think of that. Except, you see, as I look at that, that change in focus literally changes everything. See, if you stand up behind a pulpit and look me in the eye and say, hey, you, I'm talking to you, you go and make disciples. You know my reaction to that immediately is, oh, I got to get a program. Yeah, a program, a discipleship program. Where can I find a good discipleship program? Who's got the best? Who's got the best material? Does the publishing house have anything? I better investigate. What's the program? Oh, now, how long should the program be? Let's see, should it be 7 weeks, once a week? Or should it be, hey, just one strong weekend? Would that pull it off? What kind of commitment should I get from these students? Hey, what should I really teach them? What's the most important thing to emphasize? Because I got to shape and mold and make these people into disciples. And so are there any videos available? If the whole deal is make disciples. But you see, when it shifts to, hey, I'm not going to make disciples, I'm going to be a disciple. All of a sudden, wow, what I am, then you mean I'm going after the heart of God, brother. I'm going to seek Him with my whole being. I'm going to focus entirely on Him, and I'm just going to go after His heart, and I'm going to seek Him and be wide open. And do you know what that does to me? That means then I don't stand behind this pulpit and say, oh God, there's people sitting in this congregation tonight who need to be disciples and need to hear Your voice. No. That means I stand behind this pulpit and say, Jesus, there's somebody here tonight that needs to hear Your voice, and it's me. It's me. And I'm seeking Your heart. And I'm wanting You with my whole being. And I'm coming after You, Jesus. Yes, I believe, and that has stimulated this seeking. And the more I seek, the more I know about You. So the more I believe, therefore I'm seeking all the more. And I'm seeking You tonight and expecting You to speak to me. And as You speak to me, I'm going to respond. So lo and behold, the Word is opened up. And you know what happens to me? The Word cuts me to the bone, man. It cuts me to the bone. It goes to the deep of my heart and just uproots me and just tears me wide open. And the next thing I know, I find myself on an altar of prayer, responding and seeking in openness before Him. And I look out of the corner of my eye, and guess what? There's my brother kneeling next to me. Now, why is he kneeling there? Well, we had a Sunday school class on going to the altar, and he learned that he should do it. No. Why is my brother kneeling next to me? Well, we had a seminar on discipleship, and one of the heart of that was how to kneel at an altar effectively. Why is my brother kneeling beside me at an altar? Oh, it's because I am seeking the heart of God, and I am being a disciple. And when I become a disciple, guess what? He sees how to do it, and he sees it's okay, and he begins to respond too. And the next thing I know, he's being a disciple. And who taught you that, boy? Well, I was just watching you. And in being a disciple, somehow, some way, disciples are made. I'm this guy off the streets. I just got saved last night. In fact, I got saved down at the Baptist church, and I decided to come over here. And here I am, man. I'm hanging around looking, and I don't know how to act in church because I've never been in church. I don't even know what you're supposed to do in church, you know. How am I going to learn? I'm going to watch you. Oh, yeah. I see that you're playing tic-tac-toe during the singing. Oh, that's what you're supposed to do during the singing. Well, great, man. Where's my paper? I'm going to be like you. I see that you look at your watch 4 or 5 times through the message. So I decided, well, that's one of the common responses. I got to get that down. So how do I know how to act in church? Oh, I look at you and you teach me. And it's an overwhelming thought, ladies and gentlemen, to begin to think in terms of what would happen if everybody in the church was just like you. What kind of a mess would we have on our hands? What kind of response would we really have? Jesus, could it be that I am the big problem in the church? Oh, this is hard for me. Could it be that the reason the church is the way it is because I've been here all this time and I have trained and I've been being a disciple and people have become like me? Jesus, would you let me see your face again? And let me focus anew and begin to seek? Would you make this a time tonight when you yank me out of my rut and my little patterns and the way I've always been, and you give me an internal, I know, God, I can't turn it on and I can't turn it off, but I'm asking you tonight for you to stimulate within me the overwhelming hunger and passion to seek. Would you let me see your face until within me the cries begin to roll and I just begin to cry. Oh, to feel your heart and know your mind. Seeking your face. And I guess, Jesus, what scares me the most is that I would sit right here in this place tonight, that I'd be right here in this sanctuary tonight, and lo and behold, I would feel nothing. I would just be, I would have no stimuli going on in me at all. That there would be no push, no. I would have no desire to seek. And anything I would do tonight in terms of response would be artificial and put on. Because there would be nothing deep in my heart that would be drawing me. And Jesus, if that's where I am tonight, whoo, I've got more problems, a bigger problem than I realized. And it may be, Jesus, Oh, I'm talking about me now, Jesus. It may be, Jesus, that I've been so busy making disciples, running around, operating the programs, trying to get, and they wouldn't cooperate. And I had them, and nobody came, and it just made me mad. And I've done, and Jesus, the whole, and they're a bunch of flakes. I mean, they aren't going to, and Jesus, it was so discouraging because I was trying to make, and they didn't want to be made. Would you bring me back to being? Believing and focusing on your face and seeking you from the depths of my insides, saying, oh, I want to know you, Jesus. I got to know you. And then looking out of the corner of my eyes, seeing there's a whole bunch of people that seemingly are getting in on this too. And in being a disciple, somehow others are drawn to become that also. It's about, I don't know where you are in this. Are you seeking? Please, please do not hide behind this word faithful. See, I've been there. I've done that. I've been faithful. See, I showed up every service. I had my devotions. I prayed before my meals. I was so faithful. I did all of that. But I was deader than a doornail. There was no seeking going on, and I was not a disciple. So the issue tonight is, are you being a disciple? This belief thing, this seeking thing, all linked together until there's this inside burn that just continually grows within you, just seeking Him, knowing Him, grasping Him, expanding, changing, until things just don't seem to ever quite be the same anytime. And what could we do in our world if we were being that? Oh, you understand. I've got to get on my knees again in response to seeking Him. Seeking Him. What else can I do? For to deny the inside cry of my being would deny who I am at this moment. Would you like to join me?
Bravehearted Voices is brought to you by the Ministry of Deeper Christian in partnership with Ellerslie Discipleship. Our passion is to help you grow spiritually by providing Christ-centered resources, discipleship, and training in the Word of God and the victorious life of Christ. Our agenda is to bring back the stuff of old, the sort of Christianity that is lived out with the gusto of heaven and actually and practically works. For more, visit BraveheartedVoices.com.